football. It was on your televisions. It was on your televisions. You can't deny it. There was Lions football. It's back, baby. It's good again. Maybe. I don't know. Is it good? Who knows? That's why you're here to listen to us on the Pride of Detroit PODcast. POD stands for Pride of Detroit. First three letters of the word podcast. This is what we call our podcast. We do this every week, and it still seems awkward because I am Chris Perfett, the adequate host at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. My man here, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, he's back. He's ready to just dig through way too many notes.
Yeah, no victory Monday music today. Lions lost. So sad.
In a preseason game. Hooray. This means the season's over, right?
Yep. Doom and gloom.
Go home. We got Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. Ryan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm wonderful. I can't wait to get to the Wayback Machine.
Oh, yeah. Last Wayback Machine this week. We took an argument whether we were going to finish up Wayback Machine or Listcast. And I think Wayback Machine won. And Ryan is really hyped up to do three games in one go.
It's going to be easy. I can sum it up in two words.
Yeah. Find out what those words are. But we have another guest. Last week we had Hamza on. He's one of the new writers at Pride of Detroit. Now we have on Mansoor Shaheen, who actually we've had on the POD cast before, I believe, over the summer. And now we liked him so much, we decided to bring him on full time. How you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. Yes, I was so great the first time I got hired. So that's nice.
Yep. No, you just blew us away. Wow. We were like, wow, look at this like extra level podcasting skills. He's got podcast nunchakus.
I went from a mailbag troll to guest to writer. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Climbing the ladder.
That is climbing the ladder. That is absolutely climbing the ladder of a vaguely fringe podcast environment.
Josh LaFon, take notes.
Maybe one day you'll stop being an enemy of the show. Zack Snyder, the new enemy of the show from Detroit Jock City. I can't remember why I made him the enemy of the show. But
he made that crack about Nickelback doing the halftime show, I think.
No, he was doing like, he wanted to do like Kid Rock and I think Eminem to do a cover of Africa.
Yeah, no. If Kid Rock touches that song, we're abandoning ship.
We're abandoning everything.
It wasn't worth the joke. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, I just saved you from someone getting mad at you, apparently. What we're not abandoning is going to Oakland and talking about the 16-10 loss, if you can call it that, in the preseason to the Oakland Raiders as everyone sits around and gets really excited for John Gruden, who, from my viewing experiences, basically sat on the sidelines the entire time and just started mouthing obscenities every time a flag went against Oakland.
Yeah, it was a pretty sloppy game, I think, on both sides of the ball. Obviously, we're going to get into the Lions side more so than anything else, and it wasn't necessarily a great game. But, I mean, maybe it's just that game was at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, and every flag and every review just felt like it took forever. But John Gruden wasn't happy. I wasn't particularly happy. I doubt Matt Patricia was very happy. It was just kind of a bummer of an opening game, even though it doesn't mean anything.
The game had trouble getting started.
That's right.
With the clock issues. So not only was it 10:30 Eastern time, but the stadium clock couldn't get its stuff together. So it was just like so ready for football. And to be honest, I barely made it out of the third quarter.
Don't have that problem out here. It wasn't a perfect time for me.
I checked out at halftime. That game was, yeah, too late.
I think that's the right call, though, for all preseasons, is check out around halftime. There's rarely something, granted, for us, hopefully we've got at least one person who watched the second half because we're supposed to be, you know, experts on this roster. But the nominal fan, you can check out after halftime. Stafford was suited up but didn't play. I think that was to be expected. And most of the first team, I believe, did not play. So this gave us a chance to look down the list. And I think next segment we'll play impress, depress. But just let's get the notebooks straightened out. Like, what do we have as far as notebooks about this game or about certain players that you want to talk about?
Well, I guess let's start with what the people were most excited for, looking the closest at. And obviously,
say the words.
Establish.
Yes. Yes.
Running game.
Yes.
The Lions did. You know what? I'm proclaiming it. The Lions established the running game. They are 1-for-1 in establishing the running game. The running backs averaged all of them, aside from Zach Zenner, who barely counts as a running back these days anyways.
Oh, hey.
Averaged over 4 yards a carry. Or Abdullah averaged exactly 4 yards a carry. But they have to be like, if you're the optimistic Lions fan, that is what you're coming out of this game talking about, is the running game.
Right.
Because Kerryon Johnson looked good. Amir Abdullah looked a lot better than we have seen him play in a while. LeGarrette Blount was kind of so-so, but the Lions were able to run the ball for a lot of this game. The only downside, I would say, is that when the first string offensive line was in the game, which was not for very long, they couldn't run the ball that well. But they also mostly had LeGarrette Blount in there, not Amir Abdullah and Kerryon Johnson. So we'll see.
Well, they also had bad job Joe Dahl in, too, instead of P.J. Lang.
That is true. T.J. didn't play in this game.
I think we're going to play this in impress depress, but Joe Dahl did not look good last night, really.
Ooh. Brutal. And it's disappointing because he's basically been that first guy off the bench all training camp, him or Wesley Johnson. And I talked about it in the Facebook Live preview show. Like, he was one of the guys I was going to be watching, and I didn't have to look very hard because he was usually turned around trying to chase the guy that had just run by him. So, yeah, Joe Dahl is definitely going to fall on the depressed list of what happened last night. But for the rest of the offensive line, Taylor Decker only played 3 or 4 snaps. We don't really know if that was an injury thing or if that was just kind of easing him back or whatever. The rest of the offensive line, I think, played 1 or 2 series. So, so far, fine. I thought pass protection was especially good for that first string unit. Run blocking, so-so, but after they stepped out of the game, we saw the running backs do their thing, and that was exciting.
My only note to follow up with you there, Jeremy, is once again, our old friend Evan at Big Slick McDick, back on Twitter, finally, thank God. He sent out a tweet last night. Me, when the defense is bad, it's preseason, this doesn't mean anything. Me, when the run game is good, this is real and actually fixed now. So, good to have you back, Evan. We missed you, Mr. McDick. Let's give room to our new guy, Mansoor. What'd you think about what's kind of your biggest takeaway from the first glimpse of real Lions preseason action?
So the offense only had one touchdown drive, but I feel like they looked fine. Like, our quarterbacks were bad, but those are our backup quarterbacks. But I feel like we shouldn't be as low on our offense as a lot of people are exiting that game. Our running backs, all three of them that are actually going to like play this season, looked really good, as Jeremy mentioned. Offensive line, they had trouble with the run, pretty good protecting the pass. Our wide receivers, none of them really played much, so I can't really say much about them. Our tight ends were worrying, though. None of them, I think Hakeem Vallis, is that how you say it? He had a decent game, but Mike Roberts was bad. Luke Wilson only played like probably 10 snaps or something. Tight end is the weakest position on offense, and it could be a worry this season, but overall our offense looked fine for like having the worst quarterbacks possible running it.
What do you think of some of these other guys who are kind of maybe lower on, because it was basically a showcase of guys who were trying to figure out on the receiving. I think Brandon Powell led the day by like a yard, and then Kerryon Johnson, I'm looking here, had 33 yards. Like, there wasn't too many guys who really stood out among like Kenny Golladay, but did not have he couldn't catch anything last night. And Jace Billingsley, I mean, he caught 2 receptions, but they're both very short. So these are kind of the names that people are really excited about as far as like young wide receivers. And I'm kind of curious what you guys thought about their performances last night.
I don't think anyone who we don't expect to make the roster earned a roster spot on offense that night. Like, yeah, none of them were really impressive.
And it's hard, right? Because the quarterbacks were so bad. And like, I personally expected Tio Redding to show up, and he caught 1 pass for 8 yards. But when you have a quarterback like Jake Rudock, who just didn't look like he knew what the hell he was doing back there, kind of resorted to he looked a lot like his first year self, where he's not throwing the ball downfield. He's panicking at the slightest hint of pressure, and he just looks out of it. He doesn't look like a professional quarterback. And so when that's happening, how are you really supposed to give an honest assessment of the wide receivers?
Right.
I can't.
Yeah. And it's not like Matt Cassel did any better. He actually had a lower passing rating than Jake Rudock in this game.
Yeah, he was not good either. And 4 sacks between them. I honestly didn't think pass protection was that bad all game. It certainly wasn't bad enough where they should have been sacked 4 times. So I think I'd put at least one or two of those sacks on the quarterback. And
Yeah, there was that one play I remember, like, this was one of these Joe Dahl plays where he was just collapsing and Matt Cassel kind of stepped up directly into right into the waiting hands of an Oakland Raider.
Yeah.
I think what's pretty telling about the receiving stats though for the Lions is that a lot of these guys are short yardage players, or I mean, like, even you said, like, Brandon Powell, that's a guy who played running back but then is converted to receiver. Kerryon Johnson, the other top leading receiver running back.
We've seen flashes of it the past few seasons between Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah. It might be a good trend for the offense.
Sure. But I think it kind of just goes to the point that the quarterbacks didn't necessarily, they played it very conservatively. I don't think either of those guys, I mean, they didn't throw a pick. Like we mentioned, 3 sacks for Matt Cassel, a sack for Jake Rudock. I don't think either of those guys necessarily maybe wanted to take a risk and throw an interception, something that may be perceived as maybe a bad read or a bad throw. And then all of a sudden that knocks him down a peg. So, the offense I thought was very conservative, and I think it will be that way going forward for the rest of the preseason. Obviously it'll open up once we get an actual professional quarterback under center. Matthew Stafford just shouldn't play all preseason. That's my hot take.
You don't want him to play even in the third preseason game?
No.
After what happened to, I'm not going to say his name right, to Guice.
Guice.
Guice, yeah, after what happened to Guice, I think everyone's in full panic bubble wrap mode for all of their favorite players.
I guess it's not even so much that, like, I understand, like, the reactionary element of it, but at the same time, having to watch Jake Rudock and Matt Cassel run this offense, there's nobody who's stepping through that door in the tragic and horrendous case that Matthew Stafford isn't able to play quarterback. So, like,
the Rick Pitino game happening out here.
Dude, that's where I'm at. Like, I just don't want to have to go through a season. And I mean, I know it's football's all flukes and everything like that, but, like, let's just not let the fluke happen during the preseason. Yeah.
The one thing I'll say is, if the starting five offensive line isn't out there, I don't want him out there at all. Oh, I don't want Joe Dahl in the game with Matthew Stafford also in the game. So
absolutely,
Elaine's out. We don't know what's going on with Taylor Decker. If either of those guys are out, don't put Matthew Stafford out there for even a single snap.
All right. Well, one note there before I move on to the defense to play Ryan's game. Sean Hill ain't walking through that door. All right. Let's talk about the defense, because we talked enough about the offense. Mansoor, this was, I think, most people, if there were downers on this first performance, it came from the performance of the defense. What did you take away?
So our defensive line has no idea what they're doing. Sylvester Williams wasn't a signing I liked, like, at all, and he kind of showed why that night. I know it's just preseason, so you can probably write off bad performances from Williams and A'shaun Robinson, but these are concerns that they've had their entire careers. Neither of them can really pass penetrate, and they're supposed to be run stuffers, but neither of them have ever really been great run stuffers. And we saw it. They were getting just manhandled by the Raiders, like, second offensive line unit. And usually, like, a second offensive line unit versus a second defensive line unit, the defensive line unit should have a huge advantage. And our first defensive line unit was getting manhandled by the Raiders, like, second offensive line unit. It was ridiculous. Our edge rushers, they weren't very good either, but Ansa wasn't around. Hyder's coming off an Achilles tear. Alex Barrett, I mean, he's going to be a, like, rotational bottom roster guy anyways. So I'm not going to, like, really bash on them, but Williams and Robinson were both absolutely terrible. And I feel like that's something I might carry into the season, because they've been bad for a long time, both of them.
Sad to hear that about my large adult son.
I'm in full agreement though. That's to me, like, the biggest negative takeaway from this game is those two specifically, because, I mean, you can say all you want about the preseason, but this isn't like a schematic issue. This isn't them playing vanilla defense. This is them not winning their one-on-one matchups. And like Mansoor said, this is against mostly number two guys as they got into the second. And I think they may even play a little into the third quarter. So
that drive that Connor Cook had against this defense was just brutal to watch.
Yeah. And you can say all you want about maybe this is just them being a bend don't break defense. I don't buy that. I know they only gave up 16 points and one touchdown.
Yeah, bend don't break
Friday night, but that's
bend don't break against Connor Cook.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'm running out of hope very quickly for A'shaun Robinson, and it isn't just because of this game. It's because of his 2 years and then coming back in this third year and immediately laying an egg. So yeah, I'm right there with Mansoor. I'm concerned. I'm not saying the sky is falling yet. Obviously, it's a preseason game, but not a good start for this defensive front. Maybe it gets better when Ziggy's in there. Maybe it gets better when Ricky Jean's in there. But I'm not hopeless, but I'm not hopeful right now.
Ryan, you get the last word before we go to break.
I think we kind of lulled ourselves into this understanding that like the defensive interior and Patricia's scheme, it's like, oh, they're just like, you know, they're just gap managers, like maintain your gap and then we'll let the linebackers take care of everything. And it was like, you know what, our front seven really wasn't that good last year. They didn't make a whole lot of changes. Mansoor brings up, you know, the Sylvester Williams thing, which seemed like a nice idea, but then, you know, the Raiders game was just evidence and served proof to the idea that, like, well, if those guys aren't maintaining their gaps, how much harder it gets for a linebacking core that was really bad last year. It gets even harder and it gets even more difficult. Like, I don't want to hit the panic button, but my hand is hovering over it and there's another button that's next to it that says Jonathan Hankins, and like, why not? Like, why not? Like, figure out a way to make it happen, because like that unit needs help like bad.
It's really bad. This front seven is like going into the season. I think we knew for a while, but it was kind of galling to see it on display last night, just how bad it's been. And we've known about this because for whatever reason, this front office has refused to put resources into it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into it in impress depress, but there was, I think, one bright shining spot, albeit pretty fleeting.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, let's take a break. Yeah, good tease, good tease. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to play Impress Depress, which is a favorite game of ours that we have not played in a very long time, and we're getting into it. And then we're going to close out Wayback Machine for the 2017 season. It took us a long time, but we're killing it right now before we have to start talking about more preseason. Stick around. We'll be right back. Impress, depress, da 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 da. There. Now we have
a theme song.
Now we have a theme song. A long returning impress, depress, where we tell you who has impressed us and who has depressed us. Mental health is not a joke, but guess what? We're just it's how we name it. I don't know.
You've already impressed me. I want someone to put like a little piano to the back of that, and just that'll be our new theme for impress, depress.
Maybe if I ever did production for the show, more production or something. All right. Now that preseason is back, we play Impress Depress, which is basically our stock report, who's up, who's down, or whatever. Only in this case, our decisions are far more ephemeral. And I just wanted to say, I'm glad we kind of stuck with schemes in the last segment, because I am of the belief that all these guys, like, I think the final roster is already set in stone, to be honest, except for like maybe one or two cases. But I've been arguing with people up and down about it. They disagree. So my belief in preseason is very limited. That said, I do have someone who impressed me and someone who depressed me.
Well, hit us.
Do you want to do that, or do you want to go around the room first?
Well, okay. we can hold that off for tease. Do we want to go?
Here, I mean, I'll just do it. I'll say I am impressed by John Gruden, who is going to have a hell of a year on the sidelines. Every time they cut to him after the Raiders get a flag thrown against them, he is just going to be mouthing obscenities, and it's going to rule. And I'm making a drinking game right now based on it. He's going to have so much fun in the modern NFL. Depressed is Chris Spielman, who How many times did he call Derek Carr David Carr?
One too many times.
I don't think he called him Derek Carr. I think he called him David Carr.
I know there's a big amount of Lions contingent that's in Chris Bielsma's side because
he's a homer.
He's a homer and he brings a lot of energy to the booth, which it can be a good thing if you're saying the right things, but I don't think he's saying the right things. And he didn't see a hold on Kerryon Johnson's long run. I absolutely did. Maybe
of course
being,
you did.
I'm blind. Like, he hooked his left shoulder or his right shoulder with his left hand pretty good and turned him. And so, I don't know. Spielman needs to take a chill pill because he's too emotional about the game and not enough analysis.
I like that. I like aggro. I do want to ask this, though. I don't know if this is in the mailbag. I think we talked about this before. Like, do you guys want kind of what baseball, basketball, hockey have where you got like home team broadcasters? Or do you like this weird system where Fox just sends whatever team they deign to send each week?
I don't like home team broadcasters. They're always way too biased. And even when it's like the team I'm rooting for, it's just annoying.
Fair enough. All right, let's actually get on to the actual impression.
What? Who is saying no to a Dan Miller, Dan Orlovsky booth?
I'm talking about the idea in general, not like specific people.
I'm sure there's a lot of people outside. Hold up! What are you doing here? You are shitting on. Hold up! You turned around and started shitting on Chris Spielman. Said he's for homer people. Now all of a sudden you're out here defending Dan Orlovsky. You know what Dan Orlovsky's stock is to anyone outside of the state of Michigan?
Here, it's bigger than you think. And first of all,
no, it's not.
My main complaint with
Chris Spielman it's not
is emotion over analysis. Dan Orlovsky will give you actual analysis.
I can't deal with him. We've hit that point in the podcast where I just can't deal with Jeremy. So we're going to move on to Ryan.
You can't refute me?
No, it just means that you are just speaking bullshit. Anyway, we move on to Ryan. Who impressed you in this game, Ryan?
All right, my impress that I teased at the end of last segment was Mr. Devin Kennard, the Lions. I guess you can consider him their big free agency splash of this offseason. To be honest, I wasn't very high on Kennard. I haven't been very high on him all offseason. I know a lot of people saw him just because of the numbers that he signed for, and he was one of the first of the free agents that signed. People were really excited about him. It was hard for me to get excited about him, even after looking over Mansoor's player spotlight of him that he did over at Lions Wire. He just seems like a guy who, when they used him as a pass rusher, he'd be effective at times, but then he'd be so completely ineffective at other times. I knew that the Lions needed a guy who brought consistency, and it just didn't seem like he was that guy to do it. Now, I know I'm not going to, you know, go off the rails about a guy who played, you know, what I think like 12 snaps.
12.
Yeah. But he did a pretty good job of, you know, getting some pressure on Derek Carr. He actually even he was the one who was responsible for that duck that Carr threw that Quinn almost intercepted. Actually got his hand in on it. Him and Zettel brought some pressure. Now that gives me something to be excited about. I know it's limited, small sample size, but Devin Kennard is somebody who impressed me, especially for a guy who spent some time on the NFI list.
And who depressed you?
Who depressed me?
Jeremy, don't slap stuff.
The player that depressed me the most, it's kind of a bummer because I like the only training camp that I've been to, Tyrell Crosby like really had me excited. Even though it was like make one really good play and then kind of take a step back, he copied that trend into his first game. I totally think that he's a guard playing in a tackle's world right now where he's at. I think that he's going to be much better suited to play guard than he is playing tackle. But I think we just saw a lot of that in the Raiders game. He was the one who was responsible for the holding penalty that brought back the huge Kerryon Johnson run. I wasn't overly impressed. So I guess he's the player who depressed me the most, because I know that you guys have some defensive players you want to talk about that are way more depressing. But yeah, Terrell Crosby.
Don't we all? All right, Jeremy, you get to speak again. Who impressed and who depressed you?
Let's go to the defense, but let's go with someone who impressed me, and that's fourth round pick Deshaun Hand. He had two key run stops when Lions were desperate for some. If I think part of the reason he impressed me so much is because after the play of A'shaun Robinson and Sylvester Williams, I was just desperate to see anyone in the middle of the field that could do something. And Deshaun Hand looked pretty damn good there in the second half. I think he finished with, I want to say, three or four tackles total, and two of those were run stops, one on a third and one, one a little bit later. But for a team that is in desperate need of like a big guy in the middle who can clog some space, Deshaun Hand looks like, you know, if he can kind of continue this this wave of, let's just say it, momentum in the preseason, I think there's a good chance that he could be basically the third guy off the bench there at defensive tackle. Probably not going to be a starter this year unless something goes wrong in terms of injuries and things like that. But when I was in desperate need of some optimism, Deshaun Hand came in there with his three tackles, two of them solo, and gave me a little optimism for the future of the defensive line.
All right. Did you get to who depressed you then?
Depressed. Let's go back to the defensive line again, because I don't know. We can talk about some pressures coming from Devon Kennard, and Anthony Zettel played okay, but I was hoping for a little more out of Kerry Hyder. It seems unfair to him since he's coming off of obviously the Achilles injury and only played 14 snaps in this game. But again, I think it's part of my desperation of wanting to see a good pass rusher on this team, and Kerry Hyder just didn't really do much of anything in this game. Not necessarily a big surprise, so maybe disappointment isn't the right word for it, but just someone I wanted to see break out. I was probably just putting a little too many of my hopes into him, but I'm hoping we can eventually see the Kerry Hyder that we saw a couple of years ago.
All right, Mansoor, you're up next. You get to take home impress, depress. What'd you think?
So for impress, I have Amir Abdullah. Obviously, he was on the roster bubble entering training camp. He's a guy that some people see as being on the outside looking in. I think he kind of quelled all concerns. Like, I think he locked up his roster spot. He was the star of the Lions' only drive that ended in touchdown, and really their only impressive drive on offense. On paper, he had four carries for 16 yards, but I think he had two carries that were like pretty decent called back for penalties. Yep. I think he had a reception for 7 yards, and he had the rushing touchdown. He was a pretty bad punt returner when he was in, but the fact that he's getting some reps at punt return in general probably speaks well to how he's to his state on the roster right now. I think he locked up a roster spot. I think he showed enough, and he really impressed me. I'm happy for him.
I think he was also the team's first kick returner. He just he didn't take any out of the end zone on Friday, but yeah, I think that's an important point to make. The only question to me, and maybe I'll throw this to everybody, is do you think it's an audition? Do you think he's on the market?
Possibly.
Maybe, but I don't know if he can be. And I know that the thing about Twitter that frustrated me the most on Friday night was hearing all of the Amir Abdullah truthers come out, because we were Amir Abdullah truthing before it was cool. But
we were looking at the Zapruder film while you were just talking on 4chan.
Yeah, you know how much time I've spent on Twitter trying to convince people that Amir Abdullah is not injury prone and that
back
he's not
into the left.
Fumble prone. It's ridiculous. But yeah, I think at this point the Lions just he has to be their fourth running back, right?
I mean, if you're making a depth chart today, absolutely. Like I'm with Mansoor completely. I think he's got a roster spot locked up if the Lions want him. And I'm not so sure that he's not on the trade block, because I do think he has a lot of talent, and there's going to be a lot of carries that the Lions just aren't going to have for him. I mean, Theo Riddick didn't play in this game. So if he had played in this game, I don't know if we would have even seen Amir Abdullah much. We certainly would have seen him until the second half.
I think one aspect, people kind of forget about Abdullah is that he can really take some carries away from Kerryon Johnson this season. And for a rookie who's definitely not going to be at his best in his rookie year, and for someone who might have durability concerns, having Abdullah, who plays a similar role to Johnson in the offense, or can play a similar role to Johnson in the offense, on the roster to kind of take the workload off of Johnson in his rookie year, I think that's pretty valuable. Like, I don't think we should trade him away just to keep Johnson healthy in the long run.
This might be going a little too far down the line, though. Would you support the Lions dressing five running backs in a game then, if we're including Nick Ballore?
I'm not sure. Probably not.
Yeah, I can't get into that.
Yeah, so then who's the odd man out? I mean, it's a tough situation there, because then you
probably
got
Ballore, but
yeah, and maybe let's talk about that really quick, because we were talking about the return of the fullback all off season. Nick Ballore gets 7 snaps in this game. He only gets 5 snaps in this game, 7%. So was that all talk for nothing? Are the Lions going to just, you know, go game by game and decide, okay, we want to fullback this game, we don't want to fullback this game?
Does that just kind of coincide with the Lions are probably running a pretty vanilla version of their offense?
It could be that too. I don't know. But basically what we saw on Friday was exactly what we saw last year, which is, yeah, we have a fullback, but we're not really going to use him.
Let's say we take that as our cue to break here. When we go back to the Wayback Machine, you guys get that? I'm sorry. Sorry. Wow, kind of got sidetracked. Who depressed you then, Mansoor?
Jalen Reeves-Maven. So there's a weird contingent of a crossover between like Film Grind Twitter and Detroit Lions Twitter. And we all love Jalen Reeves-Maven, all like 3 of us. And he really wasn't good. Especially last year, he's probably our best coverage linebacker when he was actually on the field. And he had a good, he had a pass breakup in the end zone early in the game, but the Raiders just worked him. I believe like one of the Raiders tight ends had like back-to-back catches on him one drive that ended in a Raiders field goal or something. His main utility is that he's our only good coverage linebacker, and he didn't show that at all. So pretty depressing that he failed us.
Failed all 3 of you.
Failed all 3 of us.
The whole linebacking crew did not really look all that impressive. Partially because the front 4 wasn't doing their job properly. But I think you could even throw, not that Jared Davis did anything particularly disappointing, but he just didn't show up in this game, which is kind of sad.
Yeah. All right. Now let's take that break. Let's go to the Wayback Machine, because we got to pound out 3 games in the span of 1 segment, and then we got to get onto the mailbag, which has questions about Amir Abdullah and trades and all sorts of reactions to one game of football. So stick around. We'll be right back. Wayback Machine, for the last time in this year. As we said, we're probably going to make changes to the Wayback format, but people seem to really enjoy going back and looking through a season that was, because in many ways, I feel like this sport relies on a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Not amnesia. It relies on amnesia a lot. It's always looking forward towards the future. It's selling you the hype of what's going to come next. Even before a season's done, people are talking about the draft or a new coach or what this team's going to look like. But it takes some patience to look back at what just happened and get a feel for what this team is. So we're talking about the close of the 2017 season this week, which closed with a home game against Chicago, 20-10, as #WeOwnTheBears rolled along. The back-breaking road game against the Cincinnati Bengals, 27-17. And then the season closer at home against Green Bay, 35-11 Aaron Rodgers didn't play this game, right? Yeah. Correct. He was shut down at that point. Okay, just wanted to make sure. Where is the starting point? I think we should, in my mind, the Bears game is feel good because that's a rivalry game and you want to beat your rivals.
Yeah, and it was a nationally televised, one of those weird Saturday games. and the Lions were wearing their color rush, which some people like, I happen to hate. But yeah, I think feel good game is definitely the best way to describe this game. Lions pretty much comfortably won this game as far as comfortable Lions wins go. They won by 10, but they were winning the entire game. They didn't get off to those slow starts that plagued them in the past 3 or 4 weeks. And yeah, Stafford was good. Mitchell Trubisky threw 3 picks. The running game even did okay. 91 yards, 4.6 a carry. It was a fine game. You know, good Saturday.
It was fine.
It kept the playoff hopes alive for another week.
In a weird kind of like just drinking your own urine out of a jar, looking at maps kind of obsessive way. But yes, it was alive.
Yeah, and big play Slay. 2 interceptions on Mitchell Trubisky is a great way to spend your Saturday.
Okay. In 2 words, what would you say is the big takeaway from the Bears before we get into the rest of it?
They suck.
Bears suck. I like that.
I would need 3 words.
Go ahead.
We own them.
But I mean, as far as the Lions, like what's the big takeaway about what we learned from the Lions against Bears? Or did we learn nothing when they beat off on the Bears other than they own the Bears?
Basically, Marvin Jones.
Yeah, Marvin had that crazy catch, but yeah. Basically nothing. I mean, the Bears weren't, the Bears played terribly. Like, I don't think the Lions really had to play that well to beat them. Yeah. They looked really, really bad.
Yeah. So I don't think it told us like Monser says, you know, it didn't really tell us a whole lot about the Lions. It just kind of illuminated the fact that the Bears were not a good team last year.
I guess it reminded Lions fans that the Lions weren't like bottom of the barrel. Like they may have been really bad down the stretch, but they were still like an okay team.
We like, learned that next week, though.
Go on.
I'm saying next week we learn we are bottom of the barrel.
You think so?
Let's talk about this right now. Cincinnati 27, Detroit Lions 17, and probably the ugliest game. There's a lot of bad, ugly stinkers in this season, but the Cincinnati game was just wholly depressing.
No TJ Lang. No Rick Wagner. Insert Don Barclay.
Jesus. X-4. That was your 2 words, right? Don Barclay?
Don Barclay.
Why are there your 2 words? What does Don Barclay represent in the mind of Ryan Matthews, the rock god?
If there was, I talked about how the Bears game, at the end of that game, there was some like glimmer of hope for the Lions still at that point in their season. When the Lions, when their backs were against the wall and it was like, it was Matthew Stafford time, hell no. It was Don Barclay's time to false start, get another penalty on the same drive, and completely crush any hopes that the Lions had at making a comeback in that game. And then he was just overall bad the rest of the game.
Go ahead.
There were a few like interesting play calling decisions. I remember maybe a 3rd and 8. I don't know if Stafford checked into it or it was just a straight play call, but like we ran the ball on like a QB draw. We called a lot of weird draws in that game. Stafford, I guess, threw 35 times. So in the end, he did throw the ball a lot, but there were some interesting play calling choices made in that game that just kind of hindered us.
Who was your receiving yards leader in this game? Does anyone know?
Yep.
I have the box score in front of me, so I know, but
I don't have the box score in front of me. So I'd like to play this game.
Go ahead.
I'm assuming it might be the guy who had a touchdown the week before against the Bears. And is it Eric Ebron?
You would be right. 83 yards and a touchdown on 5 receptions.
I remember he had that one big catch and run.
Yep.
Yeah.
I believe it wasn't the touchdown kind of a big downfield pass. Yeah, it was a 33-yard touchdown.
It was that 33-yard long for the day. Yeah.
I think he did the Naruto celebration.
Oh, yeah.
The anime run, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he looked okay. He had a couple of big catches in the day, but most of this game, Matthew Stafford was shut down. I mean, 35 passes for just 203 yards. 5.8, not very good. That's actually the same mark that Andy Dalton had in this game, but cool. The offense just was not rolling in this game, and the defense, again, was having trouble stopping the run. And that's a really good way to lose a game. And Cincy was not a good team.
Yeah.
They were 6-8 going into this game. And they're not a horrible team, but they're not good enough. And they didn't really play a good enough game that they should have beaten the Lions in this game. But the Lions just had nothing left in them.
I think it was always kind of assumed Cincinnati had kind of a, like, not top defense, but upper half of the league defense.
Sure.
If you would say that, and just a really bad quarterback. So, I don't know. If the Lions are getting dismantled by the Cincinnati defense, though, that's kind of a problem there.
Sure. And then there's also the controversy because, I mean, this game would have turned people against Caldwell permanently anyways, but then in the Lions' potential game tying or game winning drive, there's that big pass to Golden Tate that the refs call incomplete. Replay was kind of inconclusive, but everyone thought that they should have at least challenged it. He doesn't get the flag out in time. Season's over.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nail in his coffin. I had an article up on Pride of Detroit, I think, within like an hour.
Yeah, there were several calls for the demise of Jim Caldwell. I think, is this the last one, or did he have a 10 men on the field for the Packers game to close out?
I think the Packers game was pretty clean.
Yeah.
Well, let's stick on Bengals then for a little bit. Anything else we want to talk about from this game?
No, I don't want to think about this game ever again. Christmas Eve.
Well, everyone
was so hyped because everything else that was happening in the league, like right by the time the fourth quarter was happening, was kind of falling in the Lions' favor. Like the Falcons were losing. And, you know, just like the whole playoff picture looked like it was headed in the right direction as long as the Lions could pull it out. And then, like, everything collapsed at the end. I think if everything had stayed the same and the Lions had won this game, they still wouldn't have made the playoffs. But at the time, there was just like this big crescendo of optimism. It's like, all right, the Lions are going to get out of this funk. They always do. Once they do, playoffs, baby. And then it all crashed Christmas Eve.
Yeah. No, I mean, granted. Okay. So this is a great way to segue into Green Bay. Before I do, we talked about Tion Green last Wayback Machine as the specter haunting the staff as the slappies got behind their guy. Rushing leader in the Bengals game, Tion Green, 7 carries for 43 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, but the week before, though, not quite as good. I think he had 3 yards a carry or something.
In the Bears game? Yeah.
In the Bears game, yeah. I mean, this is midst, like, Amir Abdullah pitching too, right?
10 carries for 35 yards. So, yeah, under four, but he was getting workhorse kind of carries in that game.
Sure. But Theo Riddick outgained him on 8 carries. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever. This is just like something for Lions fans to argue about at this time because I think everyone could see the writing on the wall by now. The playoffs weren't happening. So let's all latch on to Tion Green for 2018, baby.
There was also that group celebrating because they thought like we should lose for draft picks or something. So they were really happy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that brings up all the theoretical stuff comes up here. And I mean, granted, last week we were talking about people rooting for Minnesota to beat Carolina or something as well. Like this was the time of year where the entire fandom's going Jiffy Pop. To that end, though, I do want to move on to Green Bay. And I would ask, so let's say the Lions did win that Bengals game. Does Aaron Rodgers play on New Year's Eve?
No. Why would that change them?
They shut him down because of his he had a really bad game against Carolina because he was still struggling with the collarbone injury.
Okay, fair enough.
You think they would bring Aaron Rodgers in just to try to spoil the Lions?
Yes.
No, they wouldn't.
Those bastards.
Aaron Rodgers? They would risk Aaron Rodgers just to spoil the Lions.
Yes.
I don't think the Packers care about us that much. Like, I don't want to sound like a downer in the fan base, but
but you're right.
I don't think we're worth that.
I think they hate the Vikings a lot more. Not that a Lions would do anything to hurt the Vikings there, but.
Well, 35-11, Green Bay at Detroit to close out the year. And what felt like, it's always good to beat the Packers, but this just kind of felt like, whatever, I don't care, season's over, Caldwell's probably out the door.
It definitely had an exhibition feeling to it, but one kind of like neat thing about the season was like we bookended each side of the season with Kenny Galladay hype. because he had a 54-yard touchdown, I think, in this game after like a nasty stiff arm. And they obviously had that first game of the season against the Cardinals that was really exciting. But other than that, like, I don't know. You want to talk about the 2-point conversion? What else do you want to talk about?
Deion Green's, again, your rushing leader with only 21 yards, but hey, he's on there.
On nine carries.
The running game was awful against this broken and dejected Green Bay Packers team. Golden Tate over 100 yards receiving, but yeah, like, I think, like, it's funny enough because when we started this season, I think we all circled Green Bay at Detroit as a game where it's like, this is going to give us the heart attacks. This is going to give us the conniption fits, because if the Lions have a good season, it's going to come down to this. And obviously at that time in the preseason, we weren't expecting Aaron Rodgers to get injured and go out for the entire, you know, for basically the rest of the season at that point. And we weren't expecting the Lions to really fall on their face in a few of the games. Cause looking back now on the season, you had two tiers of losses. You had really close losses where shenanigans happened or the Lions just couldn't close, be it the Atlanta game or the Carolina game, or
even, you know, New Orleans could be in there. Yeah, as hell, they had a chance to win at the end, even though they probably shouldn't have.
Right. And then there's just games where they just get crushed, where they just, you see the life squeezed out of the Lions slowly. And that's like the Baltimore game, the Thanksgiving game against Minnesota, even though I think that ended up as like a one possession game. The Bengals game, right? Like that's the story of the 2017 Lions. So to look back and think that we were all worried about Green Bay to end the year was kind of funny looking back on it, because it just shows you that these seasons just never work out the way you think we're going to work out. Cause I think we were all expecting, like, you know, the Lions would be in contention, not if not for the division, at least for like a wild card spot, and would come down against, you know, a Green Bay team with Aaron Rodgers, who's trying to get to another playoff thing. And it'd just be one of those epic showdowns where the Lions have usually been cursed, but at least they've got a fighting chance because they're at home. And it wasn't that. Instead, Packers at Lions just turned into just a silent desperation for both teams. Both teams with losing, the Lions with, I think, what, 9-7 to close the year, the Packers 7-9. Either team could have gone 500. No, I've got my math wrong. Never mind. Point is,
no, yeah, you're right. If the Packers won, they both would have won.
Yeah. And if the Lions lost, they would have been 500, right? Yeah. So, like, just at that point, for both teams, what should have been an epic climactic battle instead turns into, can the season be over already?
Was anybody mad about the Lions winning this game when it happened? Because I think it could have swapped basically draft positions with the Packers, because I think the Packers may have edged out the tiebreaker.
The tiebreaker still would have gone to the Lions. I know that because if the Lions finished third, they would come to DC, which this season, I think, which would have been nice. But I was really happy the Lions won, because that meant first back-to-back winning seasons of my life and first sweep over the Packers in my life. So it was nice to get those out of the way.
Okay, I'll buy that. I mean, I'm not one to dwell on draft position, because draft's a crapshoot anyways, so four spots, I mean, it can be a big deal, but it also might not mean anything at all. But I think there were definitely people very loud after this game that didn't want the Lions to win, not only because of that, because they were fearful that Jim Caldwell may have saved his job, especially with the fun plays at the end with the Philly special.
Oh, the Philly special, that was great. I loved that. Forgot that happened this game. We should have talked about that more. But no, I mean,
when I said the 2-point conversion, like 2 minutes ago.
Well, you said a 2-point conversion. I didn't know what you were talking about then, because it started to get hot in here without my AC. So, but I think the Caldwell thing is a fascinating thing to think about. Did any of us? I'd love to go back. I don't think any of us were saying that Caldwell saved his job with this game, though.
No.
I think that's something Lions fans invented for themselves.
That ship had sailed.
I don't know how definitive it was. I don't think it was clear cut, as we're remembering.
I think it was pretty clear cut from being in that press conference at the end. You could tell that like the writing was on the wall.
What was kind of your takeaway from that press conference?
You could just tell that Jim Caldwell was so above like answering questions about it or even entertaining the thought of getting into a discussion about like whether or not, you know, this was the last game he'd coach or things of that nature. But like it just from the mood in the room, and you could tell that, I don't know, there's something about, and I'm trying not to prescribe like too much, like, you know, hindsight or, you know, hindsight bias to it or anything, but without like any like verbal commitments about like how sure he was of how, you know, that he would return or anything like that, the Cincinnati game is what really did him in for sure.
Right.
So it like the entire game, you know, if the Lions are anywhere near like competing for a playoff spot, like if that last game would have mattered, do you think that they run that 2-point conversion Philly special? Absolutely not. Like it felt like Caldwell really kind of took the handcuffs off things for this last game and like was just, you know, letting Jim Bob Cooter kind of do what he wanted to do, and the game just felt different.
It did have this feel of a send-off game, and it's interesting you say the whole handcuff thing. It's like, well, why were the handcuffs on him to begin with?
Why? Because that's Jim Caldwell.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is why I never really like
wristwatch handcuffs. Wristwatch handcuffs.
I'll go ahead and say this: like, he had kind of won me over a little bit last year by like his whole. If you go by his whole resume, there was part of me was like, just give him one more year. Just give him and Bob Quinn. Let Bob Quinn get this roster to a better place, because I don't think the roster was good enough to be a good playoff team last year. I really don't. And part of me was just like, give me one more year with Caldwell, which was surprising even for me to like hear myself say that, because from day one, I was not into Caldwell for all these reasons we're just talking about. Handcuffs the team. He's too conservative. Doesn't go for it enough. But there was part of me I just wanted one more year. And it was at this point where I was like, I'm fine either way, but I guess I just don't feel strongly that either way at this point in the offseason, but I just wasn't amongst the group that was off with his head.
Can I be honest? I did not get a feel on the Packers game, the finale of the season game, as a taking the handcuffs off type of game as much as I did a I'm going to steal every stapler from the storage room before I'm on my way out kind of game.
Maybe
that's me. Anyway, we should get onto the mailbag. What do you guys say?
Let's do it.
This season is the last time this season is complete. We are done. We are not talking about 2017 ever again until we do Wayback Classic. So,
glad that was the last time we're riding in that thing, because it was running out of juice.
Mail time, hashtag AskPOD. As always, get your questions in. Use the hashtag on Twitter. We will find them there. Mansoor has now made it through an entire POD cast with us. How are you feeling?
Pretty good. This is usually my favorite part, so the part where I come up.
Yeah, I didn't see any of your questions throwing in, so you're not asking yourself anything.
I should have. That's a good idea. I'll do it now. Well.
And how do you do that, Chris?
By using the hashtag AskPOD on Twitter. I will look for it there. You might want to tag in at Pride of Detroit. Helps us out. Otherwise, if you go on to the website prideofdetroit.com, not now, but probably later in the week when we're podcasting, you should be reading the site every day. Look for a post called AskPOD, usually written by Jeremy, and we will get you involved. You can post your question there or again on Twitter. No Facebook. Jeremy, do we have any reviews?
We don't. And I'm not going to threaten wrestling talk, but I'm not going to not threaten wrestling talk.
Every time, man. SummerSlam's coming up.
No.
This coming up Sunday, baby.
Yeah, man. I'm going to have to... I haven't watched wrestling in a long time now. I've been kind of up and down this summer, but we'll talk about it if we don't get reviews. To the questions. First off, we'll start with Blake Berry with a classic question for us. Are you guys as paranoid about the going 4-0 in the preseason curse as I am? Because I'm glad the Lions lost.
I don't care if the Lions win, lose, or tie in the preseason. I just don't want their defensive line to look the way that it looked. Or their front seven, for that matter, I guess. There's no curse.
Enough teams have gone 4-0 in preseason and then won a game in the regular season that you can't call it a curse.
It is pretty interesting, though, that the only two 0-16 teams both went 4-0.
Yeah. I think that's enough to say curse. Or at least maybe like a hex or something.
But we will win one game this season at minimum, so I'm excited.
Bold predictions for Mansoor.
Bold. Next question is from Kenny the God. What has been the most friendly and the most hostile crowd you've experienced at a Lions away game?
Ooh, this is perfect for me.
This is Jeremy's thing, because Jeremy's the one who has the money to do, like, road trips and stuff.
Money, okay. Let me just go through all of the places I've been so that you have a general thing of reference. Away games I've been to is Minnesota, Oakland, San Diego, which doesn't exist now, Seattle, Miami, Tampa Bay, and I think I'm forgetting one, San Francisco. Did I say San Francisco? Whatever, San Francisco. No. Most hostile, San Francisco, oddly. Not Oakland. I had seats in the black hole and got out pretty nice.
San Francisco
guys were ridiculous and all over us the entire game. And I'm pretty sure the game that I went to was like a 2-7 versus 3-6 game. So there's no reason why people are so... I guess maybe they're just letting out their frustrations, but whatever.
No, I mean, they're San Francisco sports fans. Like, that's kind of always been the stereotype. I mean, I'm just getting it reinforced because I've been living in L.A., but, like, Giants fans, 49ers fans, they both belong to a special, very aggressive breed of California people.
Yeah. I guess that's probably true. I would say nicest fans by far was Minnesota. And it's bizarre because not only did the Lions win that game, it was last year. They, you know, it was a huge game for them and a huge game for Minnesota. And they were just like all so friendly. And it was weird. They were congratulating us. I'm like, that's not what you're supposed to do. I'm glad that you're doing it. But like the thing is, like, you have to try to be a gracious guest where you're not being a dick. You're not like turning to fans after every play and getting in their face. And I'm pretty good at that most of the time. That game was so big, though, that I doubt I was able to control myself as much as I should have. And so the fact that Minnesota fans were so nice despite that says a lot about Vikings fans. I like Vikings fans.
Minnesotans are like half Canadian, though. So expected.
Can't trust them either. All right. Next question I have here is from Jason Benanti. With the flashes we saw, can we package Amir Abdullah and get some help on the D-line? I think we kind of touched on this a little earlier, so what do you guys think?
I think rarely do you see player-for-player swaps, especially at this juncture of the season. I mean, I could be wrong, but off the top of my head, I can't think of too many that happen.
And plus, like, Amir's trade value is probably the highest it's going to get, but I don't think it's a start. It's like, it's not a starter. Like,
it's the highest it's going to get, but it's still not good.
Yeah. If you're going to get a player in return for Amir Abdullah, it's going to be a fringe 53 guy. It's going to be a guy in the bubble. It's going to be, you know, like,
you're going to get a Sylvester Williams level type of player.
Probably not even that good. If we're being honest, it's probably more like a Jonathan Freeney.
Was Sylvester Williams very good, though?
Yeah, no, I think we'll get maybe a bit above Sylvester Williams level player, but Sylvester Williams isn't very good. There's really no defensive tackle I can think of that we can trade for that I could think would be realistically on the trade market that
That you would want, right?
That I want. Like, more bad players doesn't help.
Yeah. Well, that's been kind of the whole the motive of the bottom of the roster in the Bob Quinn era is bad players won't help, but just keep churning them. Next question from Harrington HOF. Which blocking scheme do you think is best suited for our O-line right now? Zone, man, or hybrid?
Last year, they did a lot of zone blocking, and I think the offensive line coach was just really bad at drawing plays.
It was Ron Prince. That makes sense.
Yeah. So with the new, I guess zone, just in general, I feel like in the NFL, zone blocking is a lot more effective. I don't know if that's a line specific thing or just in the NFL, I like zone blocking more, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know if there's necessarily one scheme that like fits the personnel of, you know, line's bigger offensive line than it has been in the past. You could argue that man blocking is better, power blocking, whatever you want to call it, but I don't know. I think you're going to see a lot of mixture. I think just going along with all things we say about Patricia, that we're going to see something different every week. And the Lions offensive line coach, Jeff Davidson, has a foot in both doors. He's run schemes from both. So I guess I would say a hybrid because you want to keep the defense, you know, off their toes, but it could just be, we see one week, we see the other the next week. And I don't think there's necessarily benefits or drawbacks of one specific system over the other, given our personnel.
Next question from Lions fan deplaced in Las Vegas. He wants to know about Deshaun Hand. I know it's only one preseason game, but with how poorly our D linemen looked, could you see Hand starting week one?
I don't know about starting week one. And I don't even think it really matters. I don't think the starting designation even really matters.
Not with this Lions defense, no.
I think if he's receiving like a significant like amount of the snaps, if he's getting like a percentage of snaps that's like north of like, I don't know, what do you guys think? Like 35-40%, then I think that would be like, I think that'd be huge.
Yeah. I wouldn't expect him to get more than, I expect him to be right around 30-35% pretty much all season. I mean, I even said earlier in the podcast, I don't think he should be starting this year.
Right. And by huge, I meant huge surprise, but yeah.
Right. But, you know, injuries happen. Maybe the Lions get as sick of Sylvester Williams as Mansoor is, but we'll see. I don't know. I don't think week one is way too high of expectations for Deshaun Hand.
He was a very raw player at Alabama. So I think this season, I mean, it's good if he's part of the rotation, but yeah, he's not going to be, if he's our best defensive lineman, then we're in huge trouble, like more trouble than I think we are. So,
yeah. And it's still a lot of trouble.
Yeah, no, I think we're in a lot of trouble, but if he's our best defensive lineman, or like if he's getting starting designations, then we're in a lot more trouble than I think.
And I think that was kind of like the overall like career arc of Deshaun Hand at Alabama too, right, Mansoor? Like he was this five-star like top recruit coming out of high school, goes to Alabama, never really fulfills his potential there. But I think it's interesting that, you know, if he's a really raw player, now he's coming kind of full circle back to like having, you know, Bo Davis on the defensive line, somebody who, you know, knew him from his time in Alabama. And I think a lot of the technique stuff that, you know, if they can work on that year one and year two, and maybe that's the reason why they were so willing to move up to grab him in the fourth round, you know, he's a guy that I think is truly like a Bob Quinn guy. Like when he talks about players in like year two and year three, like making those evaluations of them, like you can't be too quick to judge them after year one, like look at Tease Tabor. So I think he really projects as like a year two, year three guy.
Yeah, he was like the number one recruit in the country just because he has like the perfect like body and athleticism to play defensive end at the NFL level. But
yeah,
it never really worked for him at Alabama. And I mean, with NFL coaching, I hope he'll get it all together and contribute, but it'll be amazing if it's this year.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
All right. Next question here is from N.E. Shaw, who wants to know, which cereal mascot should the Lions sign to replace backup quarterbacks Castle and Rudock. He puts his money on the frog from Honey Smacks.
He seems small. I mean, I'm not knocking small quarterbacks because I love Russell Wilson, but seems a little small.
I think they are all small. That's kind of the problem. Like the captain, the leprechaun, they're both pretty small guys.
Tony the Tiger, baby. He's already in the cat uniform. We got this.
He's pretty fucking big.
Yep. It's like Ben Roethlisberger.
Toucan Sam?
Yeah, Toucan Sam.
What's he got?
Is there a reason?
Yeah.
No. He's a bird, and I like birds.
Breakdown.
I know the Lions wouldn't, they'd never keep four quarterbacks, but could I get Snap, Crackle, and Pop? Because are they like a one package deal?
What if it's kind of like a four horsemen kind of arrangement, kind of old school football?
Any guy could start on any given week, just the guy who gives that team that week the best chance to win.
Just a combined backfield of like quarterbacks and fullbacks, and just they switch each week. Yeah.
I think there's an Air Bud type of loophole in the NFL rules that if you get Snap, Crackle, and Pop to go on each other's shoulders and wear a trench coat, you got one person.
They need a really, really long color rush jersey.
What about human centipede out of them?
Okay.
Now we've officially jumped the rails. A couple of, like, I think honorable mentions, though. What about Count Chocula?
It's true. He could only play night games, though.
He'd be super successful in them. But then also my other one was kind of eerie too. But what about Booberry? Did you guys ever eat Booberries?
I did eat Booberry. What about what was the strawberry one? Frankenberry?
Yeah, that guy's literally Frankenstein. AKA Paxton Lynch.
Does the Quaker oatmeal Quaker count as a mascot?
Pretty I don't think it counts as a cereal.
Screw you. Life is great. Life is a great cereal.
What about the Cocoa Crisps bird?
You're just all about the birds, huh?
Can we get anyone who's on a Wheaties box?
Oh.
That's
a great nice loophole.
I just found the big loophole here. My God. All right. Last question we got here from Mansoor. Who's the most handsome member of this week's podcasting crew?
I think it's Mansoor. Normally I am, but this week things have changed.
Obviously.
All right, I lied. I've got one more question here from El Garaz. What's your opinion on the Weezer plus Weird Al cover of Africa?
Jeremy, this is all you, bud.
I disagree with everything Jeremy's about to say.
Weird Al makes everything okay. Even a horrible cover by Weezer is made okay by the presence of Weird Al.
This is a poofy hair kind of thing, isn't it?
Whoa, don't be a poofy hairist, all right?
Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSheppard. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you star side.